Typically, we have a big screen in the back behind this Roman Colosseum. Did you guys like the stage? Pretty amazing, isn't it? Yeah. When I was in high school, I majored in art, so this is what happened. This is what I did. That's not true. I didn't do any of this. We'll talk about who did this at the end of the service, but it's been a blessing to be here all week and to see God at work. One of the things that I've noticed, especially this coming Sunday, a week from today, we'll kind of do the same drill of bringing people on a stage and do a commissioning prayer, because there's about 23 of us, 24 of us, that we're going to go to Germany a week from Monday. So tomorrow's Monday, a week, we take off to go and serve in Germany for our baseball camp. And on Friday of that week of baseball camp, we have a festival, a block party at church in Germany. And that block party is to bring back all the kids and their families. And we, as the missionaries, we as the mission team, we serve in the stations. And we take all of the games and the kids come and play. And, you know, there's a lot of social and interaction and fellowshipping. But the one thing that we do year after year, which is a lot of fun, is that we as a team, we're supposed to dress with all American clothing and hats. And we make it an American emphasis. So obviously, when you're in a foreign soil and you bring, the patriotism of your own country, it's pretty exciting when you're in a foreign soil. So I know Texas is not a different country for you guys, but it may sound like. But I know you guys coming from Alabama, it's been a different deal. Actually, after church, they're traveling to the center and the capital of this beautiful Texas state, and I say capital, but it's not, but I call it capital, because San Antonio. So they're going to see Texas at its core, and they're going to spend this afternoon in San Antonio. So again, this cross-cultural thing becomes very, very, very good in most of the time. Now, 2,000 years ago, when the movement of Jesus Christ launched and begun, there was something that was taking place in the church that Paul, which is the writer of the letter to the Romans, which was the emphasis of BBS, the Roman Colosseum, the Roman culture. He writes a letter to the Roman church, or to the church in Rome, and there was a problem. There was a problem that is foreign to us, because again, for us as a country, we are very patriotic. It's interesting because, let me make a quick side note. When you see terrorist attacks around the world, terrorism, you know, especially with this ISIS Islamic movement, typically you see Islamic leaders of the Islamic community, theologians, you know, those high leadership, that they get on TV and they make very strong apologies about, you know, what is taking place around the world. And they always talk about how those radical Islamic movements, they do not represent the whole of Islam. Well, again, this concept of being prideful or to be excited of you making connection with your heritage sometimes is not the case. In the book of Romans, you're going to find that scenario. And I hope and you can get a Bible, because that's all that we have to show you. So I don't know if you can read this far from this little screen. But Romans chapter 1, beginning in verse 16, Paul encounters a church that is not very... it's not very prideful. It's not very encouraging about their Christian heritage. In other words, this is a brand new movement at the epicenter of culture. And Paul finds the need to remind them that he is not ashamed. Because apparently the church was ashamed. The church was ashamed of the gospel. And Paul says, I am not ashamed of the gospel. So when we see our, you know, missionaries from Alabama, and we see our church going to Germany, and we openly and unapologetically confess this gospel, I want to remind you that the theme for this year with Vacation Bible School was Rome, Paul, and the, anybody remembers? And the underground church, because there are places around the world that if you speak openly of this gospel, your life is in danger. We're blessed that we're in a part of the world that we can do this as much as... I mean, come on, think about it. The Diaz just were right here. We just pray for our, you know, our team, our ministry here. All this freedom that we have to convey and to exercise our calling. It's a blessing. And I hope and you value that. I hope and you are thankful. Again, in Rome, that was not the case. These Christians, for some reason, they were ashamed of the gospel. So what I want to just give you briefly this morning for you to take home is I want you to see what is it that these Christians were ashamed. And what is it that Paul, writing to the church in Rome, he's saying, I am not ashamed. Two quick things. Number one, the first thing that Paul is saying, I am not ashamed, and you guys are ashamed, the church in Rome, he's basically saying, I am not ashamed of the content of the gospel. I'm not ashamed what the gospel is. And by that implies that these churches, this church in Rome and many other churches, they were taking the words of Jesus. Now look at me for a moment. The words of Jesus, and they were mistakenly, this is part of the shame they had, they were taking the words of Jesus and then they were recreating the meaning of the words of Jesus. So they didn't fully contradict Jesus, they just gave a little twist to the words of Jesus. Most of these letters, including Romans, are written to expand or to get the application of what the Gospels gave us, which is the words of Jesus. So I said this before, the Gospels are the words of Jesus, the epistles, including Romans, are the meaning of the words of Jesus. And these churches were twisting the meaning where Paul says, no twisting. You have to take what he said, Jesus, and apply also what he meant, not just what he said. So Paul expanding, and this is from Vacation Bible School Bible verses, okay? This week, the kids learned in Romans 6:23, same book, same church, same context. Then this is what the content is that the payment or the retribution, the wages of sin is definitely death. That's just very straightforward. Anybody who sins must die. Now, I want you to hear this very quickly because I don't have a whole lot of time and I don't want to confuse anybody. But the Bible describes three different kinds of death. The first one is what the Bible describes as the spiritual death, implying that every single one of us, and we'll do baby dedications in the next few Sundays, and I'm just telling you right now, every single baby, everyone who behaves like a baby, shouldn't, but anyway, every one of us, all of us, we are born separated, disconnected from God, so we are born dead, spiritually. No one is a child of God. Everyone is a creature of God until Jesus comes into the picture. Is everybody tracking on the language? So that's the first death. Everybody is spiritually dead. No one is born spiritually alive. Second death is the one that you are most familiar with and has to do with your physical death. And eventually, more than likely, you and I will die. I'm 44. I'll be 45 at the end of the year, so I'm half death right now. If I'm going to live 80, I'm halfway through the deal already. So, you know, that's the second death, physical. The third death is the one that I'm hoping and praying you will avoid this morning. The third death is what is called the second death. The third one is the one that implies that on that final day, when Jesus returns and he has to exercise the wages or the payment, this death implies eternal separation into a place called hell. So that's the third one, and I hope and you can avoid that. Well, the good news of this is that as there is a payment for your actions and my actions, your sin and my sin, okay, now the Bible describes that there is also another payment. And the second payment, or the payment that is opposite to that, is the payment that for us is a gift. This one we work for because unavoidably we sin because we have to. If you've never met Jesus, when you meet Jesus, now you sin because you want to, right? So think about this. This one is a gift. And the gift is the payment that we receive from God. And this payment, just like sin has to be paid through death, now the gift of God pay us or gives us eternal life. This eternal life that apparently these churches in Rome were ashamed of, they were confused, they didn't understand what eternal life was. See, Paul says very clearly that eternal life is not simply the absence of death. Eternal life is not simply avoiding hell. Eternal life is not simply that things unfold the way that you want, or ultimately, listen to this, eternal life is not simply avoiding the Roman Colosseum, because as you guys know, history tells you that, you know, Christians are going to be executed, many of them, in the Roman Colosseum. That is not eternal life. Eternal life, based on what Paul is describing, number one is a gift, So that implies that you do not earn this. It's given to you. And what he gave us is literally a person. He gave us a person. He didn't just give us something that was better than what was before. He didn't just give us a wages or a payment or retribution of something that was better than the previous. He gave us a person, and his name is Jesus Christ. Now, when you embrace this content of the gospel, watch this, please, because this is what he's describing this morning. He's describing that he's not ashamed of the content, but he also is telling us that he is not ashamed of what the content produces. Now, the question is, if you embrace that we all have sin and we deserve death, but then God gives us a gift, and this gift is not the absence of death, but it's the presence of the Son, Jesus Christ, then Paul says, I am not ashamed not only of the content, but I'm not ashamed of what this content produces. So what does it produce? Now, this is also from BBS, and the verse that they learn is that God, this is what he brings forth. Eternal life is simply understanding that God, not me, God, not the church, God, not the Roman government, God himself has demonstrated. Now, he could have written give us some sort of a message or some sort of a representation, but he demonstrated, which implies action, that he will give us his what? So please listen to me for a moment. This is extremely important. See, the consequences of embracing the gospel is not simply that your condition improves. I want for your condition to improve. Many of us, we need to improve our condition. Maybe health, maybe finances, maybe marriage, maybe relationships. I don't know, whatever the case may be, it needs improvement. And I'm all for those things. But I want you to hear this. For you to embrace the gospel, And the consequences of the gospel is understanding and beginning with this centrality that God has provided something that no one was asking for. See, the gospel of John, Matthew, Mark, Luke, and John, John begins by saying this, that life walked among us, or light walked among us, and darkness tried to overpower. What does that mean? That 2,000 years ago, when he gave us his son was the embodiment of life, and we were so broken, we were so twisted that when we saw life, we didn't recognize it. And we literally took him and put him on a Roman cross. That's what we did with life. So God gave us love when we were not asking for love. And the way he gave us love is so we can this morning understand this very simple principle. The love of God, what it does in your life and my life, allows me to understand that when God loved me, he loved me and he gave me the freedom, talking about freedom in the 4th of July, gave us the freedom not to do as I please. True freedom is simply the ability to choose God. I'm going to say that again. True freedom is simply the ability to choose God. Because of your sin and my sin, the retribution or the payment was simply death. What does that mean? That you could not. You were never able to simply say, I want God in my life. No. God had to initiate that. And he gave me what I did not know I needed in Jesus Christ. So this love obviously is connected to a word that it seems to be a contradiction of terms, because if you love, you're supposed to live. If you love, you're supposed to flourish. If you love, you're supposed to grow. But apparently, this love, because of our condition of sin, had to imply that Jesus himself died, and he died for all of us. Are you glad that he died for us? Are you glad that love is available to you and I? See, people who truly, truly know the love of God is people who understand that you did not ask for this love. Let's just be honest. Most of the time, you're not very lovable. I'm not lovable. Like this is why I really struggle when people want to get credit when they say that they love God. Because think about it. God is very easy to love. Would you agree? He's a lovable person. The challenge is to love each other. I mean, I can only imagine you guys are about to spend, 20 plus hours in a bus? That can be challenging. We're going to spend a lot of hours on an airplane and in Germany. That can be challenging. Competition or baseball. Is everybody tracking? So love is something that is reflected on how Jesus died. This morning, I just want you to think with me how this love is manifested. Because this love, this salvation, he said, going back to verse 16, it is the power. It is power. This love has an unbelievable ability that when we had no clue, no idea about this God, he arbitrarily, he with his power, simply came and brought salvation. And he brought salvation to whom? He brought salvation to those who were fighting among themselves. He brought salvation to those who had so many stigmas and so many labelings and so many prejudices. He loved and he saved all of us. And the condition of this salvation is for those who believed. That's the condition. So here's my question to you this morning. Have you believed? Have you put your trust in the person of Jesus Christ? And if you have, let me ask you this question. Are you believing? Because see, salvation is something that you initiate, but then something that must continue. So this morning, I just want to give you an opportunity. If you have never given your life to Jesus, would you consider this morning to simply open in your heart and pray to Jesus?